remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two real guys talking about life, that's good tagline.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is the God Journey. So I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of the God Journey.
Where are we going today?
Which is back-to-back on the one we just did again, because I'm off to Florida.
It's hot down there.
It's a dumb time to go to Florida, but school district got sued by the ACLU, and they've called me in to help fix things.
By the ACLU? What'd they get sued for?
A gal wore a shirt with a rainbow on it and some kind of expression of gay rights, and they told her she had to take it off or she'd get suspended. And the ACLU sued for the right because it's a T-shirt. The school's argument in court, this is hilarious. If you know anything about law, this would never work. The school's argument in court was, well, this is a suggestive sexual shirt, and if people in the classroom, kids will be thinking about sexual things because of this rainbow and a gay rights statement. And the judge handed them their hat, their attorney's head. So they feel like they need some training about how they're not going to let this blow up into a huge fight on their campuses. So.
Wow.
We're going to go help them out next Friday, next week, so that puts me gone right through the middle of the week. So we're podcasting again. Now, I was going to do this comment, though, from Salt Lake City, and I didn't get in on the last podcast, but one of the guys there who was part of this workshop with me is a Baptist pastor, former Baptist pastor,
uh-huh.
who's an attorney, who's probably one of the top five guys in the U.S. that litigate religious liberty disputes, and he's often before the Supreme Court on these religious
wow.
cases that get there. I sat down with him at lunch, and he's become a good friend over the years because I've worked with him in a number of things. And he said, oh, I just got done reading the show. Oh, I asked him, I said, have you read this little book called The Shack? I said, I read it last week. I said, you're kidding. He said, yeah. He said, I heard you had something to do with it. I said, yeah, a little bit. Played around with it. And he's going, I got to tell you, we got talking about the book and some of the controversy involved. And this is from a Baptist pastor who's a lawyer. This has just got disaster all over. Turns to me and he says, I have not read a book that is more orthodoxically Christian and yet is generous with God's spirit in the world.
Oh,
I thought, what a
wow.
great statement. I thought about, you know, we could write that down, put on an endorsement deal. But I
wow.
thought it was a great. He said, I don't prefer to get my theology through a fiction book. So he said, for me, parts of that were rough. But he said, to have a book stay so orthodox to the Christian faith and yet be so generous to people who are lost. He said, I've never read anything like it. That was cool.
Oh, that's got to be like the best comment yet.
And everybody at the table was going, what book are you guys talking about? None of the rest of them had read it, so they were all going to run out and buy Shack books.
Wow.
And they were on the back table,
but
actually.
But isn't that so strange to hear?
That Orthodox Christianity can be generous? Yeah, he was shocked by that.
I mean, I'm not, it's not a ding on the Baptist. Well, maybe it is. That's the last thing you tend to think out of, like, really religious things.
Well, a lot
that they're somehow generous to the lost.
And that's why a lot of people who are orthodoxly ungenerous feel like we're not orthodox. Because it's too generous. So that's another problem. But anyway, I thought it was cute.
See, but I don't get how you can look at the life and the person of Jesus and how he cared for the disenfranchised of the day and not follow suit. I don't get that.
I think 2,000 years of religious rule-keeping kind of blinds you to that. The rules become more important than the loving. And we talked about that last podcast. But got some good letters, though. Dan in KC wrote this. He said, I wore my new shirt for the first time today. He's got one of those sacred cow tipping shirts. He said,
ooh.
I got many smiles and several. I like that. One guy actually had heard of the God Journey. So it is a good way to connect with people. And we had a great discussion. And one lady went and got her husband to bring him back to see the shirt, saying, see this shirt? This is the shirt I was telling you about. It didn't offend anyone, and everyone seemed to like it. No one asked me what it meant. I think they had a good idea.
So little time, so much beef.
No, so much beef, so little time. One gal wanted us to put so much bull, so little time, which I'm telling you, would have been a better shirt.
Wear it in Texas.
It's funny. I wore it when I checked into the International Christian Retailing Show in Orlando when we were there. And the bellhop, as he's grabbing my bag. She looks at me and goes, great shirt. And he's just sitting in the front of it. And I said, oh, yeah, it's kind of a fun thing. And he didn't even ask what it meant. And then I turned around to walk away from him. He just busted out laughing. He goes, I didn't see that part of it. Anyway.
Oh, that's great.
A lot of fun with that shirt.
That's great.
Pam wrote this. Says, thank you both, Wayne and Brad, for your ongoing conversations about living this life in Father's love every week on your podcast. We appreciate you so much. Your constant encouragement through all the mediums you use have helped us tremendously in our journey. We are starting to feel after a couple of years now that the light is beginning to shine in our understanding and can actually recognize a transition taking shape within us.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't that amazing? I hope that's encouraging, too, because sometimes we get people saying, gosh, I heard your podcast. I heard a couple of them, and I really want to get this life. I don't get it. It takes a while, people. It really takes a while for Jesus to untap, particularly the deeper you're embedded in that whole religious performance trap. And I'm not saying everything on Sunday morning is a religious performance trap. We're not saying that part, but we are saying that the whole guilt-based, accountability, obligation-based life, when you hear about God's love and there's a different way to live, would that you could just start Monday morning and say, okay, I'm going to live different. But it doesn't work that way.
Well, you think of the whole Jiffy Pop popcorn approach to transformation. It's like just because you got a bunch of seeds in a bag and you can nuke it for 3 minutes is not exactly the way life gets transformed. And I think we really have.
Oh, man, you're making me hungry for popcorn, dude.
I think we really have a challenged approach because most people go like, okay, now that I see it, I want it absolutely gone now. And you're just going like, you know what? I don't know how to unpack the mystery of how transformation happens other than the fact that, you know what? I don't think I can do it by myself. I don't think I can just wave my wand. Nor do I think that Jesus just does. I think when he's really producing lasting change, there's a wisdom in his process. And now that I'm not fighting that, I enjoy the fact that it's like, gosh, I don't get a lot of spiritual whiplash from my transformation. It's like all of a sudden, oh, I'm just absolutely different. I recognize lasting change tends to come through that process where I'm going like, gosh, I'm having a hard time defining the time frame in which this happened, but I recognize over the last couple of years, I'm different.
Yeah.
I love how I'm different.
And we realize the disillusioned comes quickly.
Yes.
That part can come
very
quickly.
You get the whiplash right like that. There you go.
It's the gratefully disillusioned that takes a while to kick in.
The smile takes a little time to emerge.
I think it does. I think God's winning something so deep in our hearts, and he's untangling things far deeper than we know. That if we can just relax and let this be in his hands, this is after a couple of years now, we're beginning to actually recognize the transition. That's great language.
It is.
It would help people just relax a little bit and say, I don't see anything. It's been 6 months. I'm praying every day. Okay, throttle it back. It's only been 6 months. Maybe you have to stop all that intensive praying because that may not be the helpful way to say it. But learn to relax and let God do in you what God does so well. And that is transform us in. Oh, I think your granddaughters have showed up at the house down below. Hearing that shriek in the background, we're not torturing anybody here at the God Journey. I think my granddaughters have appeared, which means I'll have to leave shortly and go down there and see what that's about. Got this from Toby in Florida. Just delighted to be getting to know you. Brad, Dave, Paul. Who's Dave? I don't even know who Dave is. Oh, Dave Coleman. Sorry. The Jake book. The Bible Belt was all I knew for so long until I finally realized it was wrapped around me so tight I couldn't breathe. Isn't that good language? You guys popped up on our windshield only a few short weeks ago, and my wife and I are giddy. Well, there's the other exception to that. A few short weeks ago, kind of undermines everything we just said. And my wife and I are giddy with excitement that there's others out there marching to the drumbeat. We started hearing beginning shortly over a year ago. Okay, I guess a little more time. Actually, it's not a drumbeat. It's the unforced rhythms of grace. Don't stop slinging it all over the place.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that good? I like that. And then we got a little pushback on, not pushback necessarily, but little thoughts on our podcast about the welfare mentality of religion.
Uh-huh. Any reaction to that?
Yeah, we did. And one's just really good. This is probably a little long, but I love what she says. It's from Amy. She said, I've been an every week listener to the God Journey for about a year or so now and really enjoy hearing you guys when I do hear you. I've never felt compelled to contact you or leave comments, mostly because I'm just busy. However, I wanted to share some thoughts about your recent conversation about welfare religion. I'm a single mom of two very cute kids. and work at a job and at home, obviously taking care of the kids and cleaning up messes from their new squirt guns. I also go to school full-time, pastoral ministries major at Taylor University. Sigh, it's a long story, she says. But God wants me here, even if though it makes me slightly insane. I'm currently on a summer break. This month I started receiving welfare benefits from the government. Another long story. But frankly, being on welfare sucks. I can give you details about how much it sucks, such as having someone tell you they can help you, but only after you attend their orientation meeting. And they will send you a letter about when the meeting will be in about a month. And now if your letter doesn't get into that month, you can research it and find your letter. Well, they won't give you any money. Not to mention looks people give you when they find out you're getting government help, or the comments they make about how the state gives food stamps to people who just sit around on their butts doing nothing. I wish someone would have told me that all along I could have simply started my own ministry and manipulated other hardworking individuals into giving me money to do the work of God. I think she's being a little simpler. Just think, I could have my own jet plane now and have someone to pay for the fuel to fly it. I've always wanted to learn how to fly a plane. While I'm at it, I might even be able to convince my people that God wants me to have my ministry based out of my mansion in Hawaii. Wouldn't that be great? Oh, boy. Seriously, though, I wonder if some of those so-called leaders in the church realize how much they could be potentially hurting themselves and those who support them, let alone what they could be missing out on. I really don't mean anyone in particular, though I can think of a few, but in general, I wonder if they're so steeped in their mentality of other people should be supporting them when they could easily support themselves, and maybe they couldn't get out of it even if they wanted to. How sad is that? That's a comment, isn't it?
I think there's some real accuracy there. I think there's both sides of that mentality that, you know, here she is in some circumstances that, you know, are a long story for her and she's not thrilled about, but she's realizing it isn't uplifting to be on the receiving end of that kind of dynamic.
Yeah.
Thank you for the assistance, but it comes with a real cost.
And as a taxpayer, I want my tax money going to people like Amy.
I would.
Best use of tax money I know of to help people like this, but you're right. We look down on people like that. The whole thing that she has felt with that, you know, if you're at a point where you need a hand up, take it. Take it and find out how God wants to take care of you and provide for you and move you on.
Yeah, but there's a sense of, I do know that there's a life-giving sense of realizing that, you know what, I'm not dependent on that always coming from some other source. To be able to sort that thing out where you're just like, you know what, Lord, thank you that somehow you've helped me land in a place where I can just walk this out with you. I think that's important for just self-dignity.
Yeah. Yep. And then Lockie wrote this. Hi, guys. What struck me at the end of the podcast was how you talked about God's funding of our purpose and vision versus God's funding of his own purposes. Right now I'm trying to hear God on what his real purpose is for me. What I think it is, or is it something else? Any suggestions on how I figure that out?
I don't think there's an easy thing that I could say to answer that. I think one of the biggest challenges.
What? Don't you have a 3-point ministry accessibility test? Come on.
Mm-mm.
We can help people find their
about
gifts.
10 years ago, I think I did. But
I did. It only wasn't 3 questions. It was about 80.
Yeah.
And then amazingly, all the ministries were things we needed inside our institution to help you work hard for
us. A little self-servingness in that.
Can you believe?
But you know what? I do think that part of this whole journey, that journey into freedom and journey into being captured by God and being able to recognize what's the leading that's his versus what's the serving that's me, I think it's when you're able to kind of be honest with yourself. I think that's a real huge hurdle to cross. And when you can start to be honest with yourself without a performance, you know, that coming out of hiddenness, just like, hey, Lord, guess what? I recognize these biases in me. I'm afraid they're going to impact my decision-making. They are making it very confusing for me to understand what's my desires versus what's your leading. Can you help sort that out in me? That's the only thing I know to ask.
And I'll tell you where I've ended up on this, because I used to have all kinds of things you could teach people about, you know, discerning your purpose and gifting and calling and taking steps to fulfill it. None of that has worked in my life. Not one. Not one bit of it. I was looking at the things. I was driving to the airport yesterday out of Salt Lake City, and I was talking in the car. Everything I'm doing today, everything that's taking major chunks of my life, I didn't see coming. I always wanted to be a writer, so I guess you could say there was, you know, I loved writing since I was a kid, so maybe that's in there. But not the kind of writing I'm doing and not what I'm doing. The bridge builder thing, simple act of obedience 20-some-odd years ago, we put our 25 now, We put our daughter in school. The publishing company we now own was definitely an accident. We didn't even try to get there. And we came back from that meeting. We had a meeting shortly after we did our last podcast. Brad and I were in L.A., and we met with the producer of Spider-Man, who made the most incredible comment about the movie that we're talking about doing with the Shaq. He said, "Do you guys realize what you get to do?" And we're kind of like, "Okay, well, I'm sure I know what we're doing, but I don't know what you're talking about."
I'm not sure as excited as he is.
I want to know what he's so excited. Here's the guy that's done visual effects stuff with Spider-Man, and he read the book, was deeply touched by it, a passionate follower of Christ. And he said, "You guys are going to get to show in a movie what it might look like when God walks past a flower."
Yeah.
That just blew my mind. And I came home, and I was sharing that. My daughter was here with her grandchildren, as she is currently, and I was telling Sarah about it, and Julie just looked at me, and I blogged on this a little bit on my blog. Julie just looked at me and said, "Do you guys ever think you're way in over your heads?"
Oh, always.
I laughed. What I said to her was this: "It has been so long since I've touched the bottom. I don't know what the bottom feels like." And you know, when you can't touch bottom, it really doesn't matter if it's just 3 feet under you,
or 3,000,
or 300. It just doesn't matter. And I think what I would say to people now who want to know your purpose, if you need a purpose, your purpose is this: live as God's loved child in the earth. Just live.
See, that'll take you places religion will never go.
And then each daily obedience, however the Holy Spirit nudges you, follow the nudge. Everything I'm doing right now in my life, from Bridge Builders to Windblown Media to the God Journey podcast to whatever, was just a little nudge.
Yeah.
About something that seemed fully unrelated.
Yeah.
But this act led to that opportunity, led to that obedience, led to that change, led to this opportunity, led to this, led to this. And suddenly you come around. Now at 55, I can look back and say, I think I know a little bit about the purpose for which God's put me on the planet. But what I thought it was 30 years ago wasn't even close to what it has been.
But you know, the cool thing, again, I don't know that I would reduce this to principles, but the beautiful thing about a little nudge without the promise of what it's going to be is you followed it not for the purpose of, quote, serving yourself. I mean, I do think that there's a lot of freedom in that, where you're just going like, "Lord, I really think, you know, my best judgment call is this is a little prompting from you, so I'm going to go with it."
Yeah.
But because it's not attached to the purposed, promised outcome.
Or no, there's no income stream guaranteed in it.
There allows a greater freedom for God to just kind of conspire around all of that to bring out what he wants. And I've just recognized, you know what? I think God's intended outcomes for me are far better than the ones I've come up with.
Always.
You know, I didn't know that. I don't know why I ever suspected that somehow he was holding out. Religion kind of teaches you, when you see those sinners doing those things that they want, that I want to do, and you kind of like, well, they're getting away with it. There's that sense that the rules are telling you, well, he's kind of holding out on you.
Yeah.
And it's like you throw that off and you start to recognize, let's just see, whose desire for my life kind of trumps the other guy? And I kind of go like, you know what? I think God actually has better outcomes in store for me than I could come up with myself.
And I just don't think we're bright enough to even figure his out in advance.
No.
Would it be enough? Would Matthew 6 really be true? If I just seek the kingdom today and do what's before me. Most of the ministries we create, the purposes we're trying to find, are all about controlling this imagined future. That we don't have a clue what's going to happen next week.
And you don't even have control over it.
What you do is you have the grace to live on this day, saying, as I put the kingdom first in my life, where am I being nudged? And if the nudge is like, oh, well, that doesn't have anything in it for me, who cares? You don't know. It's not about you anyway. It was never about you to start with. So go ahead and do whatever the Spirit's nudging you to do. Love the people that are right around you already. Watch where that leads. I never thought I'd be sitting having lunch in a ritzy hotel in downtown Los Angeles talking to world-class movie producing, directing people about making a movie that some guy wrote in Oregon and didn't even want to publish. This is not on my radar screen 3 years ago.
It wasn't on anybody's, but
no.
Perhaps God's.
No, and I think that that's the trust of, if I can just get my feet off the bottom, if as long as my feet's on the bottom, I'm still playing in the shallows. And then if I'm saying, gosh, my life is not as fulfilling as I think Scripture says, maybe that's because I'm still maintaining control of it.
Well, you know what? I think part of the journey for me is I've stopped being so, quote, purpose-driven as if I have to know the outcome. I think I've been more in a tractor beam of being more and more captivated by who this man Christ Jesus is. And it's like out of a simple desire to go, gosh, of all the people I could hang out with today, I think I'd like to spend my day with Jesus. I think I'm kind of curious more about him and how he lives life as opposed to a lot of other things. And it's in the playfulness of that relationship, I find myself strangely in the right place at the right time for outcomes that I didn't intend, that it wasn't why I did them anyways, and yet I'm very happy that they've come about. But you're just going like, I don't think I'm even being tractor beamed by that sense of what's my purpose and what's my destiny. It's like, as nice as that is, I sort of feel like, you know, I don't know anymore.
And isn't it kind of a false security, maybe? Because I grew up in that, and I don't mean grew up as a little kid, but I mean in the whole charismatic renewal, the ministry times I was in more professional kinds of pastoral settings. It was all about helping people discover their gift and finding a place for them to do it. And we were encouraging people to their destiny. And I look back at all that language now, and I'm going, there was a certain addicting influence that language has, and a certain amount of you can buy into the promise and destiny when you're not even living it yet, and you get some kind of vibes from this is what God's called me to do, and I'm going to get to be that in the future, and you get some hit off of that. But none of those things were fulfilled in any ways like I thought they were. And I really have to. I think Matthew 6, I was sharing this with somebody on the way to the airport. Remember? I think Matthew 6 used to be the most unrealistic passage I would read. And say, yeah, I mean, that might have been fine in Jesus' day. But today, with house payments, insurance, you know, all these things, you just can't live every day and trust God to take care of you. Trust that God knows how to let things unfold. You just can't do that. That's irresponsible. And the people who were doing it were irresponsible.
I don't think that's what they were doing.
No, I don't think they were either. But I tell you, now I can't imagine living any other way. That, to me, is a transition. I didn't choose one day to go, okay, I'm going to start living out the realities of Matthew 6, and here are the three things I'm doing differently tomorrow morning. I've been won to this. I've been won to the fact that the way God unfolds his will is more in the dailiness of following him than it is having a long-range plan or purpose, and then having a plan to fulfill that purpose. I don't even trust that process anymore. That process took me no place valuable to my life. But the process of just saying, okay, we put our kid in school. We went there. We helped people. We served. We did a lot of things for a lot of years that was hard work, just volunteers serving other people. That became something called Bridge Builders that puts me in places now. As I said to the group I was with yesterday morning, I am fully unqualified to be sitting here in front of you. I'm not a lawyer. I have no education degree. I don't have a PhD. I don't even have a master's degree. I have a BA in Bible from Oral Roberts University, and the room just erupted. I'm not qualified to sit here, except that God has put my life through a series of circumstances and arrangements that began with a very small nudge that Sarah and I followed through on, and then lots of serving that went behind that. And I love life that unfolds that way. We used to read that, you know, John Wimber back in the day was all hot about only do the things I see the Father doing, only initiate the things I see the Father initiating. I used to hear him and go, man, that is so right. That is how I want to live. And then I would stop. If I only did the things today that God initiated, I wouldn't be doing a thing. I wouldn't know what to do. And I pray, God, I want to get there somehow. But if I only did, I wasn't convinced of anything I was doing that God had initiated. I had initiated them all. But now I've been won to that reality. Now I'm going, and what's fun about being in a situation like I'm in Salt Lake City, which is way over my head, but I didn't get here. I didn't put me here. This is not my deal. Either God's going to give wisdom and it's going to be helpful to have me here, or it's going to be a bust and I go home a disgraced person. Either way, we're going to learn something. So I'm fine with that.
There's a greater security without all of my manipulations to get someplace.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I do like thinking about purpose and destiny. I, you know, it's like I kind of like that. I'd like that. But I recognize Man, you can get lost there.
You're still young.
Yeah, I know. But you can get lost there. And the thing that I'm finding that seems to be far more fruitful is that when I focus on simple friendship with Jesus, he gets me there. And I don't have the same anxiety about the schedule and all the things that have to be done. It's like, you know what? The simple obedience, the simple relationship, where it's not like, well, all right, Lord, what's my to-do list today? I mean, I don't go in front of Jesus with this sense of, give me my chores, Master.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
It's more from a friendship of, hey, what's the adventure today?
Yep.
So, to be honest, I kind of enjoy that.
Yep.
And I have kind of recognized through trust that I think he has developed in me. I look back and I go, wow, God, when I do that simple thing of just obeying those nudges and following you to the best of my whatever confused ability.
Yep.
You seem to get me where I need to be. That if I had tried to figure out how to get there, one, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have known how to get there. And two, I would presuppose the ability to.
And please don't, I know people hear that and they think, well, so you just sit around on a couch every day smoking a cigar until God gives you an adventure.
And you, not even.
You and I start out every day right now with to-do lists so large that we're not going to
get depressed.
We're not going to complete them in months. So please don't get the wrong idea that we're just sitting around going, hey, boy, I wonder what come up next.
I'm one of the hardest working people I know, but
I'll vouch for
I'm
that.
Not getting burned out in the labor because I think the things that I'm doing, there is that sense of the life-giving nudge that, oh, Lord, I think that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
And sometimes meeting responsibilities that are in front of you is what God has in mind for you.
So, oh, heaven forbid that you should live that way.
No, it's no fun. I just want a Diet Coke and a couch and, you know, people send me money.
Where's my remote?
Yeah. This is an interesting letter. It's the last one I read, but I think it kind of plays into the theme you kind of got on a little bit ago. And I want to read. It's about a podcast we did about people, Notes from the Journey. It says, when you and Brad were reading the email from Tim about his perceived difficulty in connecting with Father, I immediately thought that God is like Yoda. He goes, now stick with me here and don't get thrown off.
I'm there.
No, I'm not a Star Wars junkie. He said, in our, at least my pursuit of him, I had ideas of who he is. And as I looked for those, I often miss him because he doesn't match my preconceived description. He is both so much less and so much more than I thought. I went looking for the king of the universe and found a homeless carpenter who loves me as I am and just so happens to be the king of the universe. It is like I've been able to get to know him for who he is rather than for what I thought he must be. At least in the past few years that he has been making the real himself known to me, I feel like he has shown me to relieve me of my expectations for him just as he has relieved me of the expectations I thought he had of me.
Mm.
Isn't that a good statement?
Yeah.
To relieve God of the expectations we have. Doggone scripture says you must do A, B, and C. He said this, I feel like Luke Skywalker looking for Yoda and then meeting him and asking if he knows where Yoda is.
A little funny guy with ears.
Because he doesn't meet my idea of who he should be. Yeah, he's this little reptilic creature with fuzzy ears who could hardly talk English. Maybe this is just how he has loved me through my junk, but each day I get to know who he really is a little more, and I'm often struck that he has been close to me my whole life, and I was pushing him aside to look for who I thought he was supposed to be.
And you know,
that's a great statement.
You know the most glorious thing? He's probably not standing there offended. See, religion would say, look, you've offended God.
Yeah.
And I want to say, I don't think you know him. He doesn't seem to be all that easily offended.
No? Oh, the Old Testament. See, people get that Old Testament stuff in there and think, well, God just, you know, he's always wanting to destroy people. And then Moses has to hold him back. That's the confusion. That's why people do think, you know, he does get offended easily. But even in the Old Testament, my argument would be in the Old Testament, those are few and far between.
Profoundly.
The larger message is that he's slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and mercy. That's Old Testament language too, but I think those parts, an offended God with my life, is easier to believe in than a gentle God who, even when I'm getting him wrong, is just in the Star Wars deal. You got Yoda playing a bit of a game with Luke.
Sure.
And I think Jesus has done that stuff with me. I think I'm missing it. He's not, like you say, he's not offended. He's not angry. He just kind of, I'm going to win you to this. I'm going to show you who I am, and it's going to blow your mind. It's not what you're looking for.
We act as though God doesn't have his own healthy sense of humor. You know?
Yep.
I mean, most people, it's like one of my favorite, like, pictures, you know, drawings is entitled The Laughing Christ. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen that. But
yeah, I have.
You know,
I think it's brilliant.
It's like, I look at that, and it's like, golly, that is not the image that most people have. And it's like, that is such a refreshing recasting of a sense of, you know what? His head back, the full belliness of he's enjoying life. That's what a day with Jesus can be like. You can have another day that isn't so awesome, but you're going to be that man that's laughing is also the one who's acquainted with sorrows. I mean, it's like he knows the full human experience, and it's like, what a joy that I don't just have to always be a smiling, giddy, optimist in the presence of God. Like, if I come there and I'm depressed, like, well, you're out of my presence. God will hang with me in whatever state I'm in and love me and enjoy me in both arenas.
And he's a real presence who at times, yes, God going to be strong and serious and sober because something absolutely. There are going to be times that that God's playful. If the thing I enjoy most with my two grandchildren who are downstairs and I haven't seen them for a few days, so I'm looking forward to getting down there. If my greatest joy in being with them is to watch them smile and laugh, why would we think God would be so different than that? Why wouldn't he want us to smile and laugh? Why wouldn't evoking joy in us be something that he treasures? Is God so different than how he made us to be that he would consider that? So the pushback on some of the elements of the shack where God spills the batter or, you know, and they're laughing around the table and people, they cringe because it so trivializes God. I just wonder, they haven't recognized who Yoda is yet. They don't recognize that God can be playful. This God that we love and serve is not this angry beast running around slapping your hand all the time when you're doing it wrong. Like Darren Hufford said on a podcast, if you would have a friend like that, why would you want a God like that? Well, we've created this image of God that is so unbefitting of him.
Yeah.
What he was in the Gospels with his guys, with the gals in Bethany, with... That shows us a picture of God just enjoying being with his people. And in the enjoying, the King of the universe gets to reshape us in his image. What could be better than that? I love that.
That is what's marvelous about this is, you know, I think I've been dropping more and more of my presuppositions of thinking that I know. And exchanging them for the joyous wonder of going like, wow, God, I didn't know you like that. I mean, I've mentioned this at different times where, you know, especially as when my kids were a little younger and we're just, you know, we're new parents. God was in my life oftentimes saying, Brad, I'm not like you.
Yeah.
And for me, it was always, I was at first feeling like he was dissing me. And I went like, no. He's exchanging my lesser view of him.
Yeah.
That is only my best self projected to the nth degree. He's like, gosh, Lord, you're wholly different than that. Yeah. Where I would be offended, you're not.
Yeah.
And it's not that truth and holiness are negotiable. It's not that at all. It's the fact that there's a security in him that isn't petulant like it is in me.
Yeah.
That he's okay with my immaturities. He's okay with my unfinished state of transformation. He loves me in every stage of development with an accurate assessment of who I am and who I'm becoming. And you just go like, to be treated like that is so empowering when you start to understand it. It's like, okay, I don't have to sort of act with arrogance or inflated value because I'm feeling very valued. Imperfections and all.
And you can embrace that without minimizing holiness or righteousness or anything else. Because it's this process of God. Someone asked me a few weeks ago, I thought, I've never even had, how old do you think Adam and Eve were when they ate the fruit of the garden? And I've seen all the pictures, you know, they were like middle-aged man and woman. He said, what if they were 12 and 13? We don't know.
We don't know. That's the reality. We don't know.
But what if they were 12 and 13? Wouldn't we look at that totally different? Wouldn't we look at the fall incredibly differently? What if God made them as infants and grew them up? We don't even think of that. We think God made them all just fully formed and all done. If God enjoys babies growing up, maybe he made them baby. Maybe they were toddlers. We do not know at what state God created them. We don't know that. But we've made assumptions. And then we've got...
And drawn conclusions and made doctrine.
And we've done so much of that to this God, which is why God wanted to reveal himself in a person, in the Son, not just through a book or through a bunch of propositions. I want you to know who I am. And Jesus blew everybody's definition of who they thought God was.
Well, just the very fact that God would actually come into the world... as a pooping and peeing infant.
Whoa, now there's some graphic.
For real.
There you go. Maybe he didn't do that. Never messed his diapers. Okay. No crying he makes. Remember the little story? No crying he makes. There you go. So maybe he didn't.
Okay.
You're kind of stepping on some
conjecture.
Yeah.
But you look at that and you just go like, somehow we have, in the name of extolling God and worshiping him, we've removed his love and fascination with humanity. You know, when you start to think of man...
He hates us. He basically hates us.
Yeah, and I go, well, but David's the guy like, what is man that you're mindful of him? I mean, that's the mind of King David just going like, whoa. And he realizes, wait a minute, somehow your fascination is upon us. That's pretty amazing. When you look at his life and you just go like a man after God's own heart, not sinless, in pursuit, and you go, gosh, what fueled those passions of his for God? I think it's the fact that he recognized how fascinated with him God really was. That's not an arrogant thing. That's an incredibly empowering thing that makes me fascinated with him.
Yeah, that doesn't reduce him to our level.
Not at all.
That magnifies him in a so much greater way that the God of the universe wants to walk alongside my life today and invite me into his grace. I mean, how much...
That he would actually desire to be my friend.
Yep.
Not as a sense of, oh, gee, I wish I coulda. It's more like the fact that he would so esteem me as to desire real relationship. What does that do in my life? It conquers 1,000 lesser things. It pales in comparison. It's like, you know what? I have the chance to hang out with you. I think I'll take you up on that.
Yeah, so what is it today? We're running out of time quickly, but just what is it today about God that fascinates you? Brad, in his journey today, what are you thinking on?
The thing that I get fascinated with is his genuine patience with my development and the fact that I'm feeling very much loved in the unfinished state that my life is in. I'm aware of so many things that are not done, but I'm not feeling dinged in the process. I'm feeling as if he actually is enjoying me. And he's valuing me in the midst of that unfinished state. And I'm just going like, gosh, that is not the way I feel towards the world and my list. You look upon me and somehow he's just giving me a sense of intrinsic value. And that's starting to change in me. I look at the people around me and I'm just going like, you know what? I'm becoming far more patient with them. Because I am aware of his patience with me. That empowers my change, not delays it. You know, I mean, when I recognize that...
Yeah, God's patient, so I have more excuses to be impatient with others.
It's producing the opposite of what people fear you would take license with. It's more like, no, it's just, I am struck by that. That is not something I have had taught to me about his character.
Yeah.
But it is something I'm experiencing in the fact that, gosh, my frustration with the fact that that list and that thing aren't done isn't mirrored in God. And I just go like, wow, you live such an anxiety-free life, Lord. I would like some of that.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.